for an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Klug.
Hello, this is Dan Z, and welcome to show number 9 of Coffee with Kenobi, a brand new Star Wars podcast that analyzes our favorite saga in a whole new way. With me is my good friend and co-host, Corey Klug.
Hello, everybody. I want to thank our listeners for nominating us for the annual Stitcher Podcast Award. A special thank you to the Star Wars KidCast and Mike from the Cantina Cast for playing a part in this. We are honored to even be mentioned. Check out the link in our show notes for further information. We've lined up some exciting guests for our upcoming year, and we can't wait for you to hear what's in store. We also have a great interview with Megan from Blog Full of Words coming out very soon, where we review Razor's Edge and talk about strong female characters.
In today's show, we are happy to share a cup of coffee with Craig Dickinson. Craig is an educator and huge Star Wars fan with some great insights into our topic for show number 9, the proper order of the Star Wars saga. We talk about how he incorporates Star Wars in the classroom, as well as his theories on effective storytelling. Ed Dawes to the IndyCast stops by for a quick cup to discuss Disney purchasing Indiana Jones. We have the next offering of your espresso shot with the Bearded Trio.
We will also look at news regarding Rebels, talk Belinda's Brew, and share some new collectible items available for pre-order. We also introduce our topic for show number 10. And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Oh wait, this is interesting.
You found something.
For our first news story, looks like we have some unofficial news regarding Star Wars Rebels, and it appears that it's going to air Saturday mornings in 2014. No mention of a specific time, but we do have a pretty strong indication based on Disney XD's Wrapping Llama. That's right, Corey. A Wrapping Llama that tells us that Star Wars Rebels is one of their Saturday morning offerings coming out next year.
Well, Wrapping Llamas don't lie, as far as I know. And I mean, Saturday mornings are classic for certain, you know, morning cartoon series. You know, you and I both grew up, you know, running downstairs and getting a bowl of cereal and sitting in front of the cartoon, you know, hours on end.
Oh yeah,
of course. So it's really no big surprise to me.
Like Clone Wars.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It'd be a great slot. Captured a lot of people. People are home during Saturday mornings, and kids get up and they'd love to sit in front of the TV for hours on end. And
I can't even imagine when else they would put it on. It's going to be just a fun part of just a Saturday morning tradition, keeping that thing rolling. And, you know, again, as we mentioned, it's unofficial, but there was a commercial on YouTube that showed Disney XD, and it was a real Disney-produced commercial. So it seems like that's going to be what we can look forward to on Saturdays. And, of course, as Star Wars Rebels comes closer to fruition, don't forget Rebels Reactions. The Coffee with Kenobi show, where we will look at every episode of Rebels that's coming out starting in April 2014.
Our next news story is exciting news from Disney acquiring the Indiana Jones film rights. I know it's a big thing, and they're looking to do new films and new merchandising. We're going to be more happy, and we're excited to hear all kinds of great news coming out from the IndyCast and Ed Dalasta and those guys.
Well, I'm extremely thrilled about it, and Corey and I, we're very fortunate because Ed is, of course, a good friend of our show, and we are big fans of the IndyCast. We sent in a clip to the IndyCast, which is episode 178, which you will be able to download through our show notes or on iTunes, where you can hear all about how Corey and I actually feel about Indiana Jones being purchased by Disney World. So pause this show, go listen to episode 178 of the IndyCast, and then come right back here because Ed sent us his thoughts just specifically for Coffee with Kenobi's listeners that we'd like for you to hear right now.
Hi, this is Ed Dolister, and welcome to Coffee with Katanga, your weekly look at... Hang on a minute. Okay, it is Ed Dolister, actually from the IndyCast, and I'd like to thank Dan and Corey for giving me a few moments to talk about the other franchise, Indiana Jones, and the wonderful news we got just a few days ago. So, unless you were living under a giant boulder, you would have heard that the internet exploded with the news that Disney and Paramount have reached an agreement for the future of the Indiana Jones franchise, giving Disney control over all future films. And while Paramount still retains the rights to the first four films, films and will receive financial participation on any future films that are produced and released, this deal paves the way for new entries by Disney in the beloved franchise. Now, I am, and I know a lot of you out there, are super excited for this, but we must remember that no official news about a fifth film being in the works has been announced. Having said that, things are looking promising, and I'd be happy with that news just as it is. However, today, as of this recording, Frank Marshall, legendary Indiana Jones producer, tweeted this: "A bit strange sitting in the Indiana Jones office in the Lucasfilm office on the Disney lot, but I'm sure I'll get used to it." He then tweeted this: "My fave photo where it all started on Indy," accompanied by a pic of him as the flying wing pilot, along with George Lucas. So yesterday, the world was thinking that we may get some new indie stuff in some form. Today, Frank Marshall is getting ready for a stint at the indie offices at Disney. Now, it doesn't take a college professor to join the red dots on the map that things are moving on a new indie movie. Okay, so maybe that is taking a leap of faith, and I'll try to end the indie metaphors there, but all things point to movement on a new film. But who knows what tomorrow brings? And no, I'm sorry, I'm not quoting an officer and a gentleman. I, for one, am absolutely excited that soon we'll be getting more indie content, and particularly more indie up there on the big screen. And if you've seen Harrison in Ender's Game or the trailer for Anchorman 2, you know he still looks fantastic and he can still point that finger like a 39-year-old. So whatever news, keep it tuned to the IndieCast, where you can find the latest info, discussion and speculation on all things Indie 5, and who knows what news we'll get tomorrow. And Dan, you definitely need to get the Young Indie box sets. They are worth it just for the documentaries alone. And Corey, make sure you watch Crystal Skull at least 5 more times for homework. Now, back to you in the studio.
And I never told him anything. I just wasn't ready, Marcus. 5 minutes would have been enough.
Thanks again to Ed for sending us that clip.
He definitely has some insight. I'm excited to see what Ed and the cast team can do. I will definitely be following them from here on out. Definitely, if you guys are indie fans, check out the indie cast and be sure to follow up.
Our next story is a plug for our featured blogger, Melinda. Melinda's Brew has been a very popular segment on our Coffee with Kenobi website, and she recently had a contest where she gave away some special Star Wars prizes to 2 lucky winners. Both Becca and Bethany were the winners for that contest, featuring Star Wars goodies that we will get to hear about as soon as our 2 lucky winners receive them in the mail, thanks to Melinda. We just want to make sure we plug Melinda's blog because she's done a tremendous amount of writing and work for us. She has a new logo that was designed by someone who works in the comic industry. So that's very, very exciting. In fact, as of today, December 17th, when we're recording this, she just had a new blog talking all about living in the moment, which is fascinating. We hope to have Melinda on very, very soon to kind of share how she got into the blogging business and to share her fandom with us. So we can't wait to have a cup of coffee with her.
You hear that? It's nice. It's warm. It's Melinda's Brew. Check it out, because she's got some great insights on, you know, her upbringing as a Star Wars fan and her insight from a female perspective, too. I think that's interesting as well. I think that she brings a lot to it as a collector, as a fan, and I look forward to her future posts.
And now, your espresso shot with the Bearded Trio.
Hi all, it's Rob here from thebeardedtrio.com. And let's get straight to it. The big news. Disney buying the marketing and distribution rights for Indiana Jones off Paramount. They've settled their differences, and Disney now own full rights for Indiana Jones. Paramount will still control the distribution of the first 4 movies, which, if you total it all up, those movies have brought in $1.95 billion. So Paramount's still in a good position there. But Disney now owning the rights, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing some news, some good news on that franchise very shortly. Disney are not going to pay big bucks for something like Indiana Jones and not do anything with it. So maybe a movie, Indy 5, You never know, we might get a TV series, that long-awaited Indiana Jones TV series that we've all been waiting for. So you never know. So let's stay tuned on that. Disney have declined to comment on the future of the franchise, and they've not actually said how much they paid for the franchise as well. But I'm sure it cost them quite a bit, and I'm sure they're going to do something with it. So stay tuned on that. We'll keep you updated on the news on Indiana Jones. Let's do some Jurassic World news now, and the actor Chris Pratt, who is set to be starring in the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy movie, is hot-tipped to be chasing dinosaurs, or rather be chased by dinosaurs, in Colin Trevorrow's Jurassic World. The actor was quoted as saying, "I know I want to do it, and I know the director, Colin Trevorrow, wants me to do it. So now it's just a matter of everyone coming together and making sure it can work." So it looks like that's a given, that Chris Pratt will be in Jurassic World. It's rumoured that he will be actually playing, and I quote, "a rugged ex-military man." So make of that what you will. Now, Colin Trevorrow has taken to Twitter to defend Jurassic World. Somebody recently asked him whether the movie will actually be a reboot. Colin Trevorrow's reply was, and I quote, "Reboot is a strong word. This is a new sci-fi terror adventure set 22 years after the horrific events of Jurassic Park." So, Jurassic Park, 1993, 22 years later, 2015. So Jurassic World will actually be set in current time. I just hope the movie doesn't slip. Let's do some George Lucas news. And how much do you think a Stormtrooper helmet signed by George Lucas would actually go for? Well, Sotheby's in London recently had an auction for just such a thing. The reserve price was $10,000 to $15,000. The actual price that it went for, $245,000. Yep, $250,000. I just paid £10, well, roughly about $15, for a small Stormtrooper helmet for my last 17 Luke Skywalker in Stormtrooper disguise, and I thought that was enough. The George Lucas Foundation will be donating $25 million to an after-school program for children in Chicago over the next 5 years. George Lucas said that the money will make it possible for underserved teens to participate in after-school programs in a safe environment and learn career and life skills. So that's a really good cause. So good call there. Over to ILM now, and the 41st annual Annie Awards nominations have just recently been announced. Now, if you're not familiar with the Annie Awards, they recognise accomplishments in animation. And ILM have picked up a few nominations, in particular for Star Trek Into Darkness and for Pacific Rim, for Best Animated Effects and Best Character Animation in a Live Action Film. You can see the full nomination list if you head over to thebeardedtrio.com. Keeping with nominations, the Book Thief soundtrack from John Williams has received its first award nomination. The International Press Academy recently announced its nomination list for the 18th Annual Satellite Awards, and the Book Thief was amongst it. I'm sure it's going to be the first of many nominations. I was talking about the Book Thief in our last show. It's the first non-Spielberg soundtrack by John Williams in 8 years, and if you haven't listened to it yet, I strongly recommend you check it out. It's soothing, it's relaxing, it's got some haunting piano music, and it's everything that you expect from a John Williams soundtrack. So that wraps up the Bearded Trio news for this week. Thanks for listening. Just before I hand you back to Coffee with Kenobi, don't forget you can follow The Bearded Trio on Twitter, and we're also on Facebook as well. Just type in The Bearded Trio, you'll find us. We have a great community there. We're always talking about George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and John Williams and anything related. So come and join the party and give us some feedback and let me know what you think. And before I go, I will leave you with one of my favourite scenes from a Steven Spielberg-directed movie. Until next time, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Faster there.
Well, we clocked the T-Rex at 32 miles an hour.
T-Rex?
Mm-hmm.
You said you've got a T-Rex?
Uh-huh.
Say again.
We have a T-Rex.
Wow.
Put your head between your knees.
Dr. Grant, my dear Dr. Sattler, welcome to Jurassic Park.
Our next news story is brand new and very exciting. It's a brand new open web space combat simulator from Disney Interactive and LucasArts. The trailer was released, which you can find on our website. Looks really, really cool. What do you think about that?
It looks great. It reminds me of actually the opening to Rebels, as they kind of did, as they had the spaceships flying in over a planet, and we saw X-Wings, we saw TIE fighters. I thought it was interesting that they had like the symbols on the side of the TIE fighters.
That was very cool. Yeah, and on the X-Wings too, they have the Rebel logo all over the place, and I really thought that was a really slick touch, very stylized.
They also had the Millennium Falcon fly in and do some things, so it was interesting to see who we're going to play as and who kind of different vehicles. It reminds me of the old TIE Fighter PC game.
Yes, that came out years after Jedi, when there was nothing going on. There was no expanding universe at all.
It was
just that. It was great. And I remember going to one of my friend's houses, and he had a catalog that had different Lucasfilm merchandise. I thought, what? There's still Star Wars merchandise? And I was so excited, of course. But it was very cool. But as far as this goes, apparently you can participate in a beta. And there's a link on our website for that as well. The first play starts beginning early 2014. So if you're able to get in on this beta, please let us know. And we'll have you on the show and you can review it for us, because it looks really, really exciting.
Han Solo, Rebel Soldier, Lando Calrissian, and Bespin Guard, each sold separately. From Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back Collection, new from Kenner.
Looking? Found someone you have, I would say,
Your lightsabers will make a fine addition to my collection.
Our first item is the Imperial Probe Droid, another great toy from Sideshow Toys. It looks magnificent. It's a 1/6 scale figure. It's got all the little lenses on it. It looks super high detail. I know, Dan, you're a big, huge fan of the Imperial Probe Droid.
I ordered this thing.
Did you get it? Okay.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't come out until August of next year. The nice thing is you can actually do a payment plan where you can just do it for $83.33 a month if you want to. And I have, as far as the 6-scale Sideshow stuff goes, I do have the Indiana Jones one that they made that comes with the Chechaputin idol and all this stuff. And it's an amazing likeness of Harrison Ford. So when I saw that they were doing this, it's got the sound effects. And it's great. It's one of my favorite droids, or whatever you want to call it, in the Star Wars universe. So I had to get this thing. I could not resist.
I'm not too familiar with the models and things like that. I don't collect a whole lot of models, but I know you do. I've seen your Indiana Jones figure, and it's basically a dead-on likeness of Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, his leather jacket is leather. His shirt is like just a shirt. I mean, it looks exactly like me. Scale him down to 1/6 size, and there he is. I'm sure with this probe droid, it's going to be, metal. It's going to look have glass on it. It's going to look perfect. I mean, it looks great in these pictures, and I can't wait to check it out.
It looks amazing. It's Sideshow does an incredible job with the detail, and it's really museum statue quality. It's going to be a fine addition to my collection, as our friend General Grievous would say. Going along with that, our second collector's news item is they now have the Commander Luke Skywalker and Tauntaun 6-scale figures available for pre-order as well. They both have payment plans. Luke's is $66.66 a month, and then the Tauntaun is $45 a month. Both of these come out October. The Luke comes out October 2014, and the Tauntaun does as well. And this is another one that I'm not going to get the Luke, even though I'm very tempted to. But I'm a little tempted on the Tauntaun because it's an awesome looking likeness. I do like the Tauntaun. It seems like Hoth stuff. It seems like everything from Hoth is really hot right now. Yeah, that is a pun, because Hoth is cold. It's an ice planet. There's so much Hoth stuff going on. It's a great time. I love The Empire Strikes Back, obviously. So, and Hoth is probably my favorite planet in the original trilogy. So this is some great stuff. And again, just like with our first story on collections, on collectibles, the Tauntaun and everything that Sideshow does is remarkable.
I find it a little interesting that you can buy them separately, because you think there'll be fans out there that just want the Tauntaun?
Oh, yeah. I was tempted to do it, and I'm sure they're going to release a Han Solo one, and they could put him on there, too.
That's true. They definitely have the four nostrils on the tauntaun there. He's breathing heavy. Looks like he's cold. Saggy eyes. The detail is exquisite.
It's great. It's awesome too. And Sideshow should probably sponsor our show because we're going to talk a lot about everything that they have going on. The Luke figure will fit on it. The total price for the Tauntaun, if you don't use the monthly option, is $349.99. Certainly not cheap. But if you're looking for one particularly high quality collectible, I would think this or the Probroid would be the one you would want to get.
Our next collector's news story comes from Things from Another World. It's a t-shirt that has a Batman style TIE fighter on it. It's a yellow oval with the TIE fighter in the middle. Looks kind of like a Batman symbol. It's on a gray background. Definitely something for fans who are both of the Dark Knight and of Star Wars. I mean, I am.
Yeah. It's $17.59 right now. The link in our show notes is to the large, but they have all sizes. Comes out in February 2014. It's a very, very cool looking shirt. Certainly a conversation starter. It sure is pretty cool. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, if this is your thing, check it out. Grab your shirt and go with it.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
I must be allowed to speak.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Our topic for show number 9 is the proper order in which to view the Star Wars saga. In what order do you think George Lucas's vision is properly presented? Does it matter if you are a first-time viewer or a Star Wars veteran? How does it enhance or detract based on sequence? And do you incorporate the Clone Wars? Joining us on this topic is Craig Dickinson. Craig is a family man, educator, and lover of all things Star Wars and pop culture. He has a fascinating vision of how to present the Star Wars films to his students that you won't want to miss. We first heard about Craig on Full of Sith as the gang over at Full of Sith talked about his theories, and since that time, Craig has become an excellent supporter and fan of our show. Craig has agreed to join Corey and me for a cup of coffee, and we are very excited to have him. Welcome, Craig.
Well, thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Absolutely, and Craig and I, through the miracle of Star Wars and fandom and podcasting, Craig and I have actually sent each other lesson plans over the course of this school year and become friends, and we knew that based on anyone who's listened to our show knows that Craig has been a regular emailer. He sent us in an MP3 on the Inquisitor, and we just knew he was the perfect person to ask for not only to how you incorporate Star Wars in your classroom, but just overall the viewing order. And the first thing we want to ask you, Craig, is how do you incorporate Star Wars into your classroom?
Well, for starters, I try to incorporate it wherever I can. I've used just clips of Anakin fighting Obi-Wan for showing conflict versus character versus character, or in referencing mm-hmm. point of view and things like that. But the big thing that I build toward every year, kind of reviewing from literature, we talk about character and plot and theme and all those things. And at the end of the year, kind of my culminating project is that I show the entire saga to this point to my students, and we pull those elements out and discuss them further in that setting.
Now, when you say, of course, the conflict, do you use man versus man, man versus nature, and man versus self?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. For that one, I've got a slideshow that I put together, and I try not to make it too Star Wars centric to do that. And so the only one that I use for Star Wars is the man versus man. And I do I found a great clip on YouTube of, it's all edited together, of the, now Darth Vader versus Obi-Wan on Mustafar clip. And so we show that, just about a minute of that.
And do you run into a lot of what is this, or I've heard about Star Wars, or does you run into a lot of kids not being as familiar with the saga?
You know what? Surprisingly, I do, which is really where my discovery and the use of this new viewing order came to be, because I wanted to find a way to do that, and I wanted to find a way to show parallels between Luke and Anakin. And I tried to do it by showing clips of the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy kind of back to back. And I found a lot of kids were confused about who was who and hadn't seen it. And it just kind of blew me away that they didn't have that exposure.
And are you tempted to just say, what is wrong with your parents?
Seriously. It's kind of funny. I have to send a permission slip home because I have sixth graders and it's PG.
Episode 3, PG-13.
Yeah. Well, and I do that when he actually bursts into flame. I cut that part. I don't show him that part. I figure that's
probably a good idea.
Team part, but usually
you cut out the scene. Go ahead.
Oh no, that's fine. Usually, when I get those permission slips back, 90% of them are, I'm so jealous. I wish I was doing that from the parents because they're basically our age. But I don't have parents that say no. But generally, the parents are more on board than the kids are. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, I ran into that this year, as you know. Well, some of our listeners probably don't know, but for the hero's journey of Joseph Campbell, mm-hmm. Craig and I collaborated quite a bit. And when we had parent-teacher conferences, almost overwhelmingly, parents would say similar to what you just mentioned, Craig, and, oh, man, I wish I was taking this class. I wish I could watch Star Wars. And, of course, there's more to it. There's actually an actual literate analytical essay and it has to be written. But you've incorporated a lot of it in there, and we think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, and I usually have – what's great, too, is I have at the middle school where I teach, there's 6th, the 7th, and 8th graders. And so I'll see last year's students and the previous year's students. And almost every time I see them, are you guys watching Star Wars again this year? Mm-hmm. They keep coming back and talking about that. And especially it's fun to see those ones that didn't want to watch it beforehand. And then, of course, when they get to the end, they're like, is there more? It's like, I'm going to bring you in and tell my 6th graders who will say the same thing that you said. They didn't want to watch it either, but you know.
Well, Greg, like you said, guys, I would love to be in your classroom and just to be able to interact with the kids and see their expressions, see what they think. But why do you think Star Wars is important and relevant?
Wow. You know, I tell the kids when we start to watch at the end of the year that I say that Star Wars is a film that makes it possible for basically any film that's out today to exist, anything that you can think of. I mean, it is the definitive summer blockbuster. So you wouldn't have the Avengers. You wouldn't have Avatar. You wouldn't have any of these things if it wasn't for Star Wars, with the special effects and the marketing and just making science fiction films accessible to the general public. It just broke those barriers in ways that I don't think we could even fathom, really. If it wasn't for that, what would there be?
Absolutely.
Do you show any background, like the Empire of Dreams, or do you incorporate anything like that to try to impact or show them the impact it had on popular culture, media, just the world at large?
You know, I love that documentary, but I haven't timed. Yeah, it's fantastic. I've pulled a lot of ideas from that, but I haven't formally shown any pieces of that. I try and show them the early posters as we go through and kind of set the stage for each of the films and when they came out, and talk a little bit about what pop culture looked like when the film came out and kind of set the stage for that. But that's really the challenge, I think, because it's kids do not understand what 1977 looked like. They don't get that 1980. I mean, what's one thing we talk about with Empire was sequels in 1980 were a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we talk about that. That's rare, and how Empire is usually viewed as a better film than the original movie, and what films does that also do? We also see where the second one is considered to be more popular or a better film. So I do try and set the stage as much as I can for what was it like when we went through this, and that's just it's a really interesting thing with, you know, like, we didn't know who Yoda was. You know, we thought, who is this, you know, this strange little creature, and why is he keeping us from getting to Yoda?
Yes, and it's hard for people to understand that when Yoda first appears, when he says, feel like what? When audiences first saw that, they didn't know that Yoda was Yoda. They thought it was some weird alien.
Exactly.
That sounded a lot like Grover.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, how do you kind of touched on this before, but how do your students respond? You mentioned that at first you get a little, not necessarily resistance, but you get students who maybe don't understand or follow through. And I guess besides not only your students responding, but how do your fellow educators respond?
Well, you know, I do get full-on resistance with some. I have some that actually, I can think of two girls from last year who specifically said to me, do we really have to watch it? And they hadn't mm-hmm. seen it. And by the end, I had both of them thoroughly enjoying it. I actually got one of them said, is there more coming? And of course, now I'm able to say, yeah, episode 7's coming. And I literally got a fist pump from a 6-year-old girl.
Awesome.
Which I said, I'm going to tell everybody about this now, because it was, you know, just kind of just blew me away at how powerful it was. And, you know, that's not my doing. Those films are great on their own, but it was so great to be able to share that experience with them. You know, there are people that just think it's just a movie and all they're going to do is just watch movies for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I've gone through to great lengths because I know what I'm pulling out, and I know the preparation that's gone into the project. And so I've pulled out lots, probably way overdone state standards and what we're covering. And
like, I was impressed with that. I saw that.
Yeah, with all the – I think I probably sent that to you.
You did.
With all of the literary elements that we're pulling out and how we're studying it and the tracking sheets. And, you know, the kids here were watching Star Wars. They think, can we bring popcorn? I'm like, no, it's not that. You know, it's a more in-depth. It's basically a close reading of a novel. We're just watching the film instead.
That's right. And then they learn that they can take those skills and tools that they have learned through this pedagogical approach. They can analyze other things. I joke with my students that right now we're midway through The Hobbit, and I'm going to take my students to see The Desolation of Smaug in a couple of days here. And I always say my goal is that you can go read a book or watch a movie with your friends and ruin it for them because you can analyze it better than anybody else.
Exactly.
Craig, before we get into like a little bit more of your curriculum, I know that you know, each year, school year, you teachers kind of change things up, try to maneuver education things around, and I was curious, you know, how long have you been doing this? And then since the start of this curriculum involving Star Wars in the classroom, has it evolved? I mean, have you picked out things that don't work and added new things? And if so, I mean, have you seen within the generations of kids, do you see a big change?
Yeah, it's. I've done it for 4 years. And the first year, I knew that I wanted to do episode 4 because I really think that that is probably the first movie that, if you haven't seen it, that you should watch. It's totally self-contained. I mean, it was kind of meant to be that way and be okay to be that way. But I also wanted to pull out the hero's journey. I remember looking at that great documentary, The Legacy Revealed. I think it was on History Channel.
Yes.
And was just blown away by all of the stuff that they were pulling out. And a lot of that I kind of knew, but it was great to see that and kind of solidified and other people saying, yeah, this is all the mythological elements that were intentionally put here. And so I wanted to pull that out and share that with students. And so we watched episode 4 and I did the tracking sheets and kids tracked character and also, but we also tracked movie things too, which is kind of fun, like camera angles and music cues and things like that.
Wow.
Well, that's hilarious and awesome how that's put in there that you can say, that's Luke's music, that's Leia's music. What is he trying to do?
Oh, strong. Yeah, you're talking about themes and motifs.
Yeah, just it's ripe for analysis. So that first year we watched episode 4, and then we had a little bit of time at the end of the year, and so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to show them Empire and Jedi because we'd started it. And so we watched that, and the last two were kind of just for fun. The next year we did it, I really wanted to show parallels between Luke and Anakin. And so I showed episode 4 and then I showed episode 1, which was That's fun. Intriguing. And you could kind of do some similar things. What's interesting about that movie, if you're not really analyzing it, you don't realize the fact that Anakin doesn't show up until about halfway through that movie, or it's like an hour into it. And so his hero's journey is very condensed in that movie. And so I was kind of happy with that, but I still hadn't got to the whole thing. So the following year, I decided what I was going to do is I was going to intersperse clips from the original trilogy with kind of corresponding scenes from the prequel trilogy. And I did this under the assumption that they had all seen the movies, and this is where it was very eye-opening for me. So like the first day, I showed the first, about quarter of A New Hope, and it ends with Uncle Owen Aunt Beru talking about how he's got too much of his father in him.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I showed the clip from Attack of the Clones where he meets them for the first time and show how this is kind of where they're coming from. And I did those type of things. All right, here's where the Stormtrooper hits his head. Here's where Jango Fett hits his head. And I just looked for things I could pull out. But it was kind of choppy. It made sense for me because I knew these things back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But for the students, I think they got hung up. So finally, I hear about this great order, and I'm just listening to Full of Sith, and I think it was Sam Witwer that was talking about it.
It was.
And he goes, 4 or 5. I'm like, okay. And then he says, I think they said they skipped number 1. But basically, it's 4 or 5.
He did say that.
That was a time crunch, and he said so. But 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6. And to do the prequels as flashback, and the more I did research on it, the more I looked at it, the more sense it made that you really could establish Luke's journey, get all the way up to the point where you get the great reveal of Vader as his father, and then explain how he got up there, how he became Darth Vader, and then you kind of have these parallel journeys in Jedi. And it just really closes off both the prequel and the original trilogy in this great parallel, and then ultimately it is the end of Anakin's journey, and he becomes Anakin Skywalker again.
And it's fascinating to hear you say that, because Corey and I, actually one of the first things we did when we started formulating Coffee with Kenobi is we went up to Chicago and went to the premiere of The Force Within Us, and we were listening to that Sam Witwer interview on Full of Sith. So you first got those ideas from him doing that as well, because I noticed on Twitter that he responded to you, didn't he?
Yeah, which was blew me away. And then he had as I told him that I'd showed those to my students, he's like, "Yeah, just got to watch all 5 seasons of Clone Wars and play through Force Unleashed, and you're set."
marketing scam. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
yeah, that's very cool. That's very, very cool. But what we want to do is that you segued perfectly and beautifully into the proper order. But I know that Corey had something he wanted to ask you about too.
Sure.
Yeah, before we get into the proper order or your preferred order, give us a little bit of your Star Wars background. You know, how did you get into it? How did you first go and see it? Do you have any nuggets of little fun stories you can tell us? And just kind of your background and how you kind of approached the saga yourself.
I'm about the same age as you guys, so I saw Empire first. That's the one that I saw first. I remember I saw it when I was 4. And I had to do the math. I don't remember being 4, but I remember seeing the movie in 1980 in that summer. And I remember some striking images. I remember the AT-ATs. And I remember Yoda. And I remember having discussions as a 4-year-old with my friends trying to figure out how Darth Vader could die and then show up later in the movie. Because that seems so rich even as an adult. I can't imagine a 4-year-old trying to figure that out. And then the one I really remember, though, is I remember going to see Return of the Jedi as a first grader. It came out right before school ended. I remember the line being all the way around the block. I was one of those kids that went and checked out the action figures beforehand. I still have my Bib Fortuna. I remember that was one of the first ones that came out.
Awesome.
And just being blown away by all of that. I mean, just the first time I saw the trailer with the speeder bikes, just my jaw dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the Ewoks. I still love the Ewoks. I loved the Jabba's Palace scene, the smack talking by Han Solo to Jabba the Hutt. Just that always stuck with me. And so I remember I saw A New Hope on a re-release, and I'd seen it after Empire, and remember thinking, why don't these people know each other? Again, I was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
But then from there, I watched them many times. They're on TV. We videotaped them off TV and watched them over and over again. I finally bought VHS and watched those over and over until they're basically worn out. And then started hearing rumblings about the re-release and went and saw those and was thrilled to watch those. And it was kind of fun to go through knowing those movies like the back of my hand. It was almost like a game. All right, what's new here? And people would ask, okay, what was new in this part? Is this new? Is this not new?
Mm-hmm.
Episode 1, and just loved that. And it was new and it was different, but it was new Star Wars. So, you know, Jar Jar bugged me initially, but less so now, especially more after reading Paul F. McDonald's book. I don't know if you've gotten to that chapter yet, but that is one of the best.
Oh, the one about the fool.
Yeah, and the thing about the frog prince and all of those things, about him being amphibian. And like,
it was, I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It really is. It's like he was intentionally annoying. He annoyed the audience on purpose. There's a purpose to this.
Well, talked about the before the just the literary value, the very first thing I ever did as a teacher, you had to videotape yourself teaching a lesson just to other future teachers, and I analyzed Revenge of the Sith to a Shakespearean tragedy. Mm-hmm. And Jar Jar Binks, of course, fits that mold perfectly of the comedic relief in the midst of all this negativity and evil that's going on. You got to throw some humor in there. And of course, episode one isn't full of horror and negativity, unless you're one of the haters. But yeah, it fits that beautifully. And it definitely, Paul McDonald, his book is something we're going to plug again and again, because it's fantastic. So again, as our main topic is the correct viewing order, and Craig gave us his theories for why, we're going to get into some of the emails which our listeners have sent to us. We're going to talk about them. And the first one we have is from Jason Duran. He sends us two emails we're going to hear on the show today. But he sent us a list of 15 things, and they are. He says, here's my input, not entirely made up by me. Number one, watch A New Hope. Number two, watch Empire Strikes Back. Number three, read Darth Plagueis. Four, watch Attack of the Clones. Five, play Republic Commandos. Six, watch Revenge of the Sith. Seven, read Kenobi. Eight, read Star Wars Legacy. 16, Claws of the Dragon Part 3. 9, watch Return of the Jedi. 10, listen to Star Wars Dark Forces Trilogy. 11, read the Thrawn Trilogy. 12, play Star Wars Jedi Outcast. 13, play Star Wars Jedi Academy. And 15, read everything else. And then he adds, you know, if all you have is 10 to 12 hours, just do 1, 2, 4, 6, and 9. Episode 1 is omitted. So 1, 2, 4, 6, and 9 would be New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, and Return of the Jedi, and he eliminates episode one. But he, interestingly, puts the prequels first and then four and six. And what do you think the logic might be behind that?
Well, I'm looking at it now, and I think that his logic is you introduce the main core characters. Then you're going back into, like I said, this kind of that, you know, flashback to be able to get some more background on what's really going on here. And then I like how he inserts Darth Plagueis because – it's an interesting. See, if it would have been me, I would have done something different. But I would have watched. Let's see, Attack of the Clones first, then read Darth Plagueis, because mm-hmm. you get the experience of that mention of the character. But then, if I don't know if you think about it, now I'm thinking about it because if you read the book, you'd already know who that is.
Yeah, that's the trick, The big reveal. The big reveals maybe sometimes a little bit choppy. Plus, if you put, and maybe this is just the old school Star Wars guy, I mean, like the two, sure. like the three of us are.
Sure.
But if you show episodes one and two first, then is Luke Skywalker still as important? Does he need to be seen first through a new viewer's eyes?
I don't know. That's a good question. Craig, any thoughts?
I think it just depends what you're looking for. I mean, I think what's usually happening with these viewing orders too is it's not for people going to be watching it by themselves, right? It's going to be for people showing other people. You know, I don't know if anyone's going to sit down and just, I've never seen Star Wars. What order should I watch it in?
Well, if they're friends with any of us, it's very possible that might happen.
Yes, yes.
Because really a big thing to consider, Craig, how old is your oldest?
Yeah, he's almost six. He'll be six in about a month.
Okay, well, I know that Corey and his kids have watched them. And actually, I don't know if, Corey, we've ever talked about the order, but and I certainly have my theories for how I'm going to show them to Mason. Peyton and Parker have already seen them a bunch of times. But how do you guys present them? Because I think it makes a big difference. Now, it's one of the reasons we put that caveat in this topic for show number 9. Does it depend on if, you know, they're kids, if they're adults? Does it really matter, the order? And if so, how do you present it to your kids?
Originally, I presented it to my older boys, just doing 4, 5, and 6 first. And then we did 1, 2, and 3. But I did 4, 5, and 6 first because that's kind of how I experienced it. And I guess I'm biased. And I didn't really think about it going in. I wanted them to like get that fun feeling of adventure. I felt that episode one kind of moved a little slow to begin with. And it's hard to catch all these characters and what's going on. And there's a lot of political stuff. The kids don't understand that at that age. And I think when you start show them episode 4... You know, right off the bat, you're jumping in, you know, X-Wings, you're flying around doing a bunch of fun stuff, and there's not a whole lot of politics. We're, you know, wrestling a princess. The storyline's pretty simplized, but I think you still get it as you move on to the rest of the films. Then you have the slow build of these characters we've met, and we, obviously, you know, the rising and falling of each, you know, character as they go along. But then we went back and watched 1, 2, and 3, and I felt like they were maybe confused, like, wait a minute, well, who are these guys, you know? And it might have been just because they were a little younger. Mm-hmm. I think like you said, Craig, my oldest was 6 at the time. Then my next one was 5. So, yeah, I don't know. It just seems like they were a little confused. And they, like I said, from now on, they've actually seen them multiple times, and they actually pick out the prequel ones to watch just on their own, just for fun, because they like
that
all the characters.
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah, I think it's more fit for a more modern audience. And Craig, I don't know about you, but when I show A New Hope to my students, if they're familiar with it at all, they drink it up. But if they're not, because the special effects are different than what the prequels are, they don't gravitate towards it as quickly. Have you noticed that as well?
Not too much. Now, which version are you showing, though? Are you showing the special edition?
I show the special edition.
I have a special edition, yeah.
Yeah, the Blu-ray version, yeah.
Yeah, I show it on DVD. And you do notice, I don't think I've heard things verbalized, but you do notice the mood is a little bit, they think it's a little slower than you originally thought. It's so familiar to us, it's like, you know what's coming next.
Right.
It does kind of drag a little bit. It takes a while to get to Luke. There's a lot of just desert landscape at the beginning. And it does move at a much slower pace than a modern movie. But once you get into the Death Star trench run, I mean, everybody's hooked at that point.
That's interesting. Well, I don't want to say way too much on other topics. It sounds like with the three of us, we could just go about anywhere with this. Sort of thing. But we're going to save that for Celebration Anaheim. What do you say?
There you go. That's a good
idea.
Sounds good.
Absolutely. So, Craig, what order are you thinking about showing your kids?
You know, originally I was going to start with episode 1 just because I kind of wanted to experiment on them, you know, because we didn't get to do that as we started. But even with this new order now, I think that I really want to do 4, 5 and then do the prequels. And part of that, too, is that episode 1 is a more complicated movie. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But for younger kids, Darth Maul can be scary.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, you don't want to turn off the kid just based on that one thing. He shows up and he just does some bad things. So 4 is just not nearly as – it's more popcorn. It's just more of a fun film, and there's just really nothing in there unless Darth Vader scares you. But he's everywhere, so I don't know how that would necessarily go. But 4 just seems to be a safer movie to start with. And so I think that I will probably do 4 and 5 to start with.
Wow.
Yeah, he's seen bits and pieces of all of them, and with the exception of Revenge of the Sith, which would be the other thing. It's like if you're going to start in chronological order, Sith is such a – it's heavy and it's dark. And if you're starting with a younger kid, you know, they can't – I mean, I'm hoping that you're not going to show your kid –
no.
Patient scene. I mean, it's
absolutely not.
It's intense. So, yeah, original trilogy is just it's a movie that we grew up with, and so I think you can handle it at a younger age.
I think, and I went on record for this for a show a couple of shows ago. But for me, when I show Mason, I'm going to show him 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and that's actually Brian Young from Full Sith has responded a few times on our Facebook thread for this. He says that's the way to do that as well. And the reason for me I'm doing it is because purely because of the nostalgia, and that's the way that George Lucas originally told it. So that's the thing I want to do. And I'm going to show him 4, 5, and 6, the original non-special edition version. And then as he gets older and is like, Dad, come on. Then I'm going to show him more of the modern take of that. But I just think it's important from a story perspective. I like the idea. And when children's minds are developing, you know, you're talking about all these educational theorists that talk about how the mind develops and works outside the box, abstract thinking about orders and characters and who's his father and, oh, this is him when he's younger, and that kid who's in that pod race and is saying, yippee, he's actually a murdering Sith Lord. So that I think does things. Now, if you're talking about someone who was my age or our age or someone in their 20s or something like that, I think I would go with Craig's order because I think from a story – perspective and standpoint, I think it's a fascinating way, especially when you do the reveal with Return of the Jedi after you've seen everything that happens with Revenge of the Sith. I think that's the way to go, and I think that's an important way to do that. I think, and maybe that's just the selfish dad in me that wants Mason to grow up and feel for Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and Princess Leia what I did as a kid.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what your purpose is. You know, you can very much do the trilogies as their own separate stories too. You know, if you're and showing them to a kid, it is great to have that be if it's your kid to go. this is what we grew up with, and if there had never been prequels, then this would still be what I'd show you.
Mm-hmm.
And then to enjoy 4, 5, and 6 as its own story, and then do 1, 2, and 3 later as its own story. And that's kind of the interesting position that I'm in when I get, you know, I get these 70 to 75 minds I get to play with every year.
Oh, it's great.
And so it becomes, again, like it's very much an experiment. How can I take them through this? And even the kids that have seen it, to watch it in a different way. And they always ask, well, what? Because I'll say, we're watching episode 4 first. Why are we watching number 4 first? How come we're not watching number 1? Well, here's why.
You know, yeah.
We're going to do this thing and see if we can pull these, you know, these illusions out.
Nice. I like the literary term you're using there, Craig.
Yeah, our next email hits on that too, what we kind of talked about. We got it from Kenny Crowley. He says, hello, guys. Great podcast, and always my proper viewing order for Star Wars films is 1 through 6, and also 4, 5, 1, 2, and 3. Keep up the great work with the podcast. We kind of hit on that a little bit.
Yeah, and Kenny, he's a great listener, and he's very, very loyal to our show. He's a big Star Wars podcaster, so we were excited to share his email on the show. I'm interested that he shows 1 through 6 in order, yeah. But then he says 4, 5, 1, 2, and 3. Now, he didn't put in Return of the Jedi, and I'm going to guess, Kenny, that's probably possibly a typo or an omission, but it seems to me he probably chose 6 after 3. Don't you think that makes the most sense?
That's yeah, I was thinking that too.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean,
or maybe he just hates Return of the Jedi or something. I don't know.
That could be. Maybe he's so anti-Ewok that he can't stand it. No, he's a huge Star Wars fan. All the things that we love in pop culture. So we appreciate his email for sure. Now, Melinda Wolf, our feature blogger on Coffee with Kenobi, has done a lot of great things for our site and our show. She sent one of her typical theses on Coffee with Kenobi. So I've split up her email. And when it comes to just the viewing order, I'm just going to kind of go through this. She says, whenever we decide to have a Star Wars marathon, which we have done at home, we watch the movies in their chronological order, and then she lists the order that they came out. She says, because we usually like to watch them all in a single day, we have to get up pretty darn early. That would be something. We usually omit the animated series. However, if we did include those episodes, we watch them between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. However, this is not the way I would really say the best way is to watch 6 films. The best way to watch the 6 films, in my opinion, is as follows. A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. And then she says, confused? Can't understand why I just wouldn't watch the 6 films in what I consider the best order? I'll explain as best as I can. I like watching the saga that George Lucas intended the story to be told, from beginning to end. Not that every single hole is plugged in the 6 films, as far as the various characters are concerned. Anakin, Vader, Obi-Wan, Yoda, Luke, Leia, Han, even Palpatine. Maybe that's why I'm such a big fan of the EU. But you get a pretty solid foundation as to what happens to them beginning to end. It's as simple as that. However, I really like coming in the middle of the story. A New Hope progresses to its conclusion, and then delving into the backstory of the prequels. Maybe it's the history buff in me, but think about it. You're introduced to whatever, it piques your curiosity, then you want to find out more about it. So you start looking at all the events that brought you to this point, wherever you happen to start. It's the same with meeting someone new. You start with the present, that really is the middle of someone's life, progress towards the future, Empire Strikes Back and Jedi. And the longer you know someone, the more you learn about that person's past, the prequels, what got him or her to that point in their life. Everyone has a backstory. You never start with that when you meet someone new. As you get to know someone, you ask questions like, what do you do for a living? Where do you live? Do you have any hobbies? Any brothers or sisters? You get the idea. Everything is in the present. If you find the individual worth getting to know better, you believe there is a future in the relationship. During the future you are forging, you ask deeper questions, find out about his or her past, especially during Empire and Jedi that we are introduced into the backstory about Luke and Vader, but also about Han and Leia that intrigued us to want to know more about their past. This is the way in which every relationship is forged. I hope this makes sense. Well, not only does that make sense, Melinda, but that is brilliant. I love that because you're really taking it like it's a real relationship with another person. I mean, not taking it to an extreme situation, of course, but when you're talking about looking at this through literary value, you meet these characters in the middle and you share their journey with them, and then you get a little bit of a backstory. How do you like that, guys?
Yeah, I like that. It's almost like when you read a book, you don't start with the main character's birth. You know, you're jumping into, you know, what's going on at that moment. And it's interesting to compare the two together, and And it makes me even think, you know, I want to go back and just, I wish I could just walk my memory clear and start over or find somebody who hasn't seen it yet and get their perspective and see what they think. But like you said, you want to be able to get to know some of the characters first and you know, journey with them for a while. And then, you know, obviously go back and kind of see how it all came to be. So like she said, you know, that's what George Lucas, you know, intended it to be for the viewing audience in the theaters. So the other thing I got to think of too, as like when we watch it, you know, we're kind of all watching it in our home, comfortable couch, you know, sitting on a small screen. You figure when it came out in 1977, this is the big screen. This was an event. You sat down and you know, room gets dark and you have this huge display in your mind. And I think that plays into it a little bit too. I think that that sense of, you get these emotions and you get these, everything running high and something you've never seen before. So you kind of feel like you have a connection to that film. So if you've grown up with it from 1977 and you're going to let someone else view it, you want those emotions to run with them. Obviously you can't, you know, rent out a movie theater and do that, but you know, you do want to, you almost have that, individual investment built in, and it's difficult to change that, I think, too. So I think that plays a big part.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's those original trilogy movies just so immediately dropped us into the action that you were invested so quickly into these characters. It's great to be able to go back and kind of fill in the gaps, but the immediacy of the original trilogy is something that can just grab you so quickly.
And plus, there's true joy in A New Hope. I mean, it's called A New Hope for a reason. And every character has their own arc, and it gets to a completion. It builds to a proper fruition. And then in Empire, there is the real pathos when Han is frozen and Luke gets his hand cut off. And then when we return to the Jedi, there really is that resolution, that satisfaction of hearing, seeing these characters. If you show, I think, a child the prequels with Revenge of the Sith first, I mean, what are you really saying to them? I mean, I guess they're going to learn in life. You know, sometimes a good guy doesn't win. Bad things do happen. And sometimes at the end of the day, you're not satisfied with how life is resolved. I'm not sure I'm ready for a kid to draw into that if we're talking about how we're going to view these for children. Now, when you're talking about adults, they can handle it. They've been through the trials and tribulations that life has to offer. I think that's a very, very important discrepancy.
I think it's something else, too, if I could just jump in.
Was, sure.
Part of the reason I like to wait between Empire and Jedi and to show the prequels, its flashback in that point, is that because we've become so invested in these characters, when Han is frozen in carbonite, when we were younger, we had to wait. And that just made it so much more powerful. And
that's right.
You can't make them wait 3 years, obviously. I make them wait a week and a half.
Wow.
So they're waiting this whole time. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Is he dead? Is he gone? What's going on with Luke? What's he thinking about? And so they have to kind of sit and stew on that a little bit, which I think just amplifies
their
emotions in Jedi when you finally get that release and he's finally let out of carbon freeze and Luke's wearing black. Like, what's been going on with him? There's been tangible time that's passed.
How much have you had students that just can't wait and they go out and rent it or download it or buy it?
You know what? None of them have told me they've done it. They've been patient enough to wait. I've had some that will, after gone through, go back and get them later and come over back over the summer and tell me they did it or went and checked out books from the library. Because that's one of the pushes I make at the end, too. Just say, there's a whole bunch – all these books, expanded universes out there. If you're still interested, go find this. And there's this available and that available. So,
well, and I do want to mention on our Facebook thread, which was pretty decent. Mike from the Cantina Cast has your order. Craig, we said Brian likes your order as well. And then Chad, also from the Cantina Cast and a loyal listener, he says watch episodes 4, 2, 5, 6, 1, and 3. Now he didn't give a reason for that. And knowing Chad, he might just be pulling our legs as well. So I'd be interested, Chad, for you to write in and kind of let us know or maybe put on the thread why you thought that was the proper order to show that. I know he's a big Dooku guy as well, so that could be it.
Huh. I'm looking at the order now in my mind. 4, 2, what'd you say? 4, 2, 5?
6, 1, 3. So A New Hope, Clones, Empire, Jedi, and then Phantom Menace, and then Revenge of the Sith. I would think that if you're going to show episode 2 before 1 and 3, I mean, I'm really
you're thrown,
I don't know.
Well, you're thrown
that's
into
a little weird.
Yeah, you're thrown into the one of the biggest reveals of the whole film saga. And you know, if you're watching number two first, you're just you know, a young Anakin who's learning to become a Jedi. Then all of a sudden he's fighting Luke and reveals he's Anakin. And I think, yeah, that's kind of jarring to me. I'll be curious to see what he says. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the viewing order of the Star Wars saga?
Well, I will jump in here and say that, you know, Craig, you talking about your curriculum you guys use in the school, in the classroom there. It makes me think about so many different ways of looking at it. And I want to go back with maybe my kids and kind of show the parallels and just, I mean, they might not get it, but just pull out certain things, like you said. And it, just to go back and just kind of revisit it and see what, you know, what new I can learn as a viewer. And I'm curious to try that out. So I appreciate you coming on and doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's just a couple of things that come to mind from that I didn't pull out from the movies until I watched it last year. And one was when you see Revenge of the Sith and then Return of the Jedi back to back, Luke shows up in black. And I think I mentioned this in an earlier podcast with you guys. I had students that said, "Has he gone bad?" They legitimately thought that because they had seen that progression already. That and the part on the Death Star 2 when Vader says, "Give yourself to the dark side. It's the only way to save your friends." And having seen him make that choice that he's going to go to the dark side to try and save his wife, originally that line was like a throwaway almost. Just like, yeah, he's just trying to suck him in, whatever. But he's like, he actually believes it.
Yeah.
Having just seen that, and that just blew me away, having just seen that movie and having just seen him make that choice.
I was going to ask you, too, what your opinion was on our topic from our last show with Scott Murray as far as the Luke and the choking the Gamorrean guards.
He skirts the edge so many times in the movie. Yeah. So, you know.
See, I can't help but think this is our own subconscious, our revisionist history. Did you feel that way when you first saw that?
No. No, it's only through the lens of Revenge of the Sith that I look at that and go, this is how close he could have come. But is that intentional now that Lucas has put that out? Did he want you to go back and revisit that and go, oh, I see how that could have gone?
Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, it's hard to know because he's trying to use his Force powers and abilities. Actually, a student, one of my students, Chance, he and I were debating this as well, and he said, but he's showing his Force powers. And then we kind of speculated, maybe that's just how he is. That's all he knows about the Force.
Right,
so
discovering it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
It's great to be able to debate it. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
No definitive answer. It's part of the fun.
Oh, the beauty of Star Wars and the many levels and layers there are to examine this incredible story that we love so much. And Craig, we are so honored and delighted that you were able to be on our show with us, and we certainly hope you'll come back again to talk about other topics, or maybe be on a Rebels Reactions roundtable with us, or anything that you wanted to chat Star Wars with.
Oh, that'd be a blast. I'd love to. It's been great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It has been great. And we want to go ahead and ask you our questions. We'd like to ask all of our guests, and I'll have Corey ask you the first one.
Sure. Craig, what's your favorite Star Wars movie?
You know, I've given this a lot of thought, and I think I have to say Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
Because it brings those two trilogies to such a beautiful close with the parallels. And I've got attachment to that. I've seen it as really the first movie of Star Wars movie that I remember, and all that great memory too.
That's very cool. Return of the Jedi is definitely having a renaissance lately, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
So who is your favorite character?
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader. Same with me.
I think he's the most interesting. I really do. He's so multifaceted now with all the extra background information we get on him now.
And what's interesting, too, I hate to do this, but now we're going to Episode 7 without Darth Vader. And he almost carries through the whole entire saga until now. And I'm curious, really curious, to see how the next film will go, you know, without that. You know, I guess now it's Luke's legacy. But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a blank slate, man. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, Craig, your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Luke saying to the Emperor, "I am a Jedi like my father before me," as he chucks the lightsaber away. And he's fully made the choice that his dad couldn't make.
That's awesome. A very powerful scene indeed. And then we have, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
I would have to say that my Darth Vader case. full of my action figures.
Oh, like we just posted on the site.
Yeah, it's underneath my son's bed now. He gets to play with it on a regular basis. So
there you
that's
go.
Fun
nice.
To share that with him, too.
Very good. Okay, final question. What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
You know, it's been said before, but I'm going to say it anyway. Just the redemption, the family bonds and sacrifice. There's clear good and evil. There's so much. But really being able to see Darth Vader redeemed by the actions of his son, who again makes those choices that his father couldn't make, and to see that circle actually do become complete, that to me is just the most powerful and amazing thing.
Very, very well said. Well, Craig, again, thank you so very much for being on our show and having a cup of coffee with us. Where can everyone, and I'm sure they're going to get a lot of people are going to love to chat with you more about the proper viewing order, and probably there are a lot of educators out there. In fact, I know there are who listen to our show, which we're very fortunate. And how can they get in touch with you and continue the conversation?
Well, my Twitter handle is at InfluxMan, InfluxMan, and that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me.
Absolutely, and Craig is very, very good about getting back in touch with you. He's always got some interesting things to say, and not only about that, but also a lot of things about Superman and all of the other great things we love to watch and talk about and just analyze, because it's an exciting time to be a geek, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. We would have never thought it could come to pass. So.
Absolutely.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, thanks again, Craig. I appreciate you sending your emails and even your MP3s, and I appreciate that because like we have always said, you know, the fans are the crux of our show here, and we just appreciate having you guys on and interacting.
Absolutely. I love your show. I love the fact that you guys interact with the fans and that you just set that topic out, and it's that back and forth is what makes your show unique and something I look forward to.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's really awesome. It's great to hear your feedback, and we know you're someone that we can count on, and your insights are always very much appreciated by us as well as our listeners. So, again, reach out to Craig, and we'll be sure to find out how episodes 7, 8, and 9 and the standalone films impact this viewing order, and we'll certainly have Craig back on again to discuss that with us.
Sounds awesome.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you.
Our topic for show number 10 is Anakin Skywalker. Was his fall to the dark side credible? Is he a hero, a villain, or is he a little bit of both? And how does viewing the Clone Wars change or alter your opinion on this character?
Anakin Skywalker is the central figure, of course, to the prequels, and maybe the whole saga. I think he's an exciting character. He's very dynamic. He's definitely multifaceted in the saga, and I'm looking forward to talk more about him.
Joining us on our discussion of Anakin Skywalker is Becca Benjamin of Geeks Helping Geeks, a good friend of our show, a friend of ours, and someone who has a lot of very intelligent opinions about Anakin Skywalker that we can't wait for you to hear. So send us your thoughts, feedback, and comments, including an MP3 or anything that you want us to read on the air, and we'll share it with all the listeners on our next show.
I like the sound of that.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Hanno, buddy, you read me?
I saw part of the message.
I seem to have found it.
Our first email is from Wayne Barnes, and he sent us a lengthy email, and he asked us not to necessarily read the entire thing, but I would like to share with you specifically what he says about midichlorians, most likely a topic that we will share in the near future. He says, last is the deadliest of horses. Back in 99... I remember people folding their arms and shaking their heads at the notion of midichlorians, even on opening night. Standing outside the theater, I remember having that conversation, that they never say the Force is midichlorians, not one place in the film. Midichlorians don't even compose the Force. They're conduits, only conduits. Yet somehow, everyone took the Force as caused by bacteria or something. The Force and midichlorians are simply an echo of those symbiotic relationships that are just the central theme of the film. They don't destroy the mystical energy field that is the Force. They just explain how the Jedi are able to interact with it, how they talk to God. To take that metaphor one step further, Qui-Gon says that when you learn to quiet your mind, you learn to hear them talking to you. They're used as a quantifiable element only to say, one, Anakin had more than most and was thus special. Two, why he was less powerful after he lost his arms and legs. And three, how he was able to fulfill his destiny and destroy the Emperor because he was more machine and able to carry out his mission, rather than to be paralyzed by lightning as Luke was. You could go on to say that the science of midichlorians was also there to illustrate that the Jedi as a religious organization has grown complacent in their understanding of the Force and had adopted a more pragmatic view of it. You know what? That is a fascinating way to look at it. The Jedi themselves had maybe taken some of the spiritual side out of things and caused somewhat of a tainted view of the Force. Paul McDonald's great book, which talks about all things prequels, he mentions that he has an excellent chapter on midichlorians that delves quite a bit into what Wayne is talking here about midichlorians and how they aren't exactly the Force, but they help to get you in touch with the Force. This is definitely a topic we're going to have to pour into. Maybe we'll share more of Wayne's email at that time, or maybe he'll share some more things with us. But how do you feel about midichlorians?
I will say I was one of those people who were just down talking it and bad mouthing it because I don't think I understood it, because we only hear about it that one time. I haven't got to, like you said, Paul McDonald's book, The Star Wars Heresies, the prequels. I'm eager to dive into that and check it out. I think midichlorians really gets a lot of fans, when you call it hot under the collar, if that's,
yeah,
you know,
fired up.
Yeah, fired up. And I think,
like Mustafar fired up.
I think midichlorians are a great topic, talking point, and we are going to definitely get to something like this. And Wayne has some other great ideas on this email. And I love when our fans write in and give us great ideas because it keeps the show going. So we appreciate it. And thanks, Wayne.
Our next email is from Megan Galloway, and she argues that Luke and Leia were flirting with the dark side because most Jedi learn to leave bad guys with a lesson and a chance to live. But Luke clearly says, Jabba, this is your last chance. Free us or die. Thereby killing him, and his twin Leia actually does it. Megan says she could have gotten her chains cut and ran in the chaos, but she uses the Force to choke Jabba to death. I don't know. I guess that's a debatable point if she actually uses the Force to choke Jabba. She doesn't know the Force.
Never mentioned that she uses the Force.
But you'd think of Jabba, a big hulking brute that he is, you know, maybe that did influence it too. Hard to say, really.
She brings up definitely some great points. And she goes on to talk about the potential that Luke had as far as flirting with the dark side. And possibly when he made his choice to save his father, and when he cut his hand off, that kind of that turning point, if you will. So
she brings up a good. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say she brings up some great points, and I think, you know, Luke fighting Vader and things like that. Like, I don't know if that was his turning point in that part of the movie. I think all along Luke is a good person. I don't think he means to do bad. He's trying to help his friends, obviously. I think he's learning. He's young in the Force at that point. He doesn't know how to really take it. Maybe, like we've kind of talked about before in our last show, that he was just kind of learning to kind of mix feelings as far as what we left off from Empire. So I definitely like Megan's theories, but maybe I don't agree with him a whole lot.
Well, that's interesting. I like what she says about the original ending with Sebastian Shaw. She says, if the ghost lineup was the correct way to portray Anakin's spirit at his point of death. He died an old man, and that is who Luke saw before he died, with the life of scars and wounds. I also felt when Luke burned Anakin's body in the funeral pyre, it's how his spirit, like in Hindu, Buddhism, Vikings, religions, the dead are sent on to the next life whole. The Sith are spiritually corrupted and desperately cling to this life, Palpatine and Plagueis, for example, and therefore cannot return to instruction and exist as one of the universe in a conscious state. Very true, and she brings up that point about the funeral pyre, very much like even all the way to the ancient story of Beowulf, one of the oldest stories in the world, where the hero was burned on the funeral pyre. And I agree with her on Sebastian Shaw. I agree with this point a little more than I do on hers of Leia. Earlier on, she did bring up interesting. I do want to point out that as a teen, she was screaming in the theater at the top of her lungs when Luke was fighting in front of Palpatine, no, don't, truly thinking that Luke would maybe go dark or just because of the pain. But he overcomes and chooses peace and surrender, forcing his father's hand. So good insights from Megan. She also really liked our comments on the Man of Steel. Let us know your thoughts, your feedback on Corey and I's review of Man of Steel, or if you want to see us do things like that in the future, because there are certainly a lot of awesome geek movies out there for us to talk about.
Like Pacific Rim.
Yeah, like Pacific.
No, again, I think we have some great fans and great emails, and Megan definitely brings us some great points and definitely some future talking points that we'll definitely explore in our next show.
Our next email is from Melinda, our future blogger we talked about earlier, and she says, "Hi, Dan and Corey, I absolutely love the last podcast. I truly enjoy all of them, but number 8 was superb. I don't know if it had to do with the fact that the theme was my favorite installment of the saga, Return of the Jedi. But I love listening to your interview with Scott Murray. So many people pan Return of the Jedi, but they don't really appreciate the story arc, especially after everything that happened in The Empire Strikes Back. Oh my gosh, my favorite scene in the entire saga comes at the end of Return of the Jedi. Luke is flirting with the dark side, locked in a fierce for the time lightsaber battle with his father. Fueled by rage and fear, he bests Darth Vader and mirrors what his father did to him during the climactic duel in The Empire Strikes Back. In the background, you hear the menacing cackle of the Emperor, enticing Luke to take his father's place at the Emperor's side. Ooh, this was all just a ploy to replace the Emperor's apprentice. The Emperor knows Luke is stronger than his father. Luke glances at his mechanical hand, realizes what he has done, as well as how close he came to succumbing to the dark side. He turns, stands tall, and tosses his lightsaber away. Never. I'll never join you. I'm a Jedi, like my father before me. Luke states with conviction. It sends chills up my spine. At this moment, Luke is stronger than he's ever been. He's willing to lay down his life for that in which he believes, which he has dedicated his life. This is what the entire saga is about. The great thing about Return of the Jedi is that it is so multi-layered. I don't know if a certain cadre of fans don't realize this, but besides Return of the Jedi being about Anakin's redemption, it's about Luke's forging his way as a Jedi. He really is a stronger Jedi than his father ever was. For what is each of us willing to give our lives? And I don't know. As I'm reading Melinda's email, and I've been thinking about this, is Luke a stronger Jedi than Vader? I personally don't think so.
Well, I was going to say, just from our last introduction to our next show, a topic, we mentioned that Anakin's one of the strongest.
He's the strongest, but according to this midichlorian count, and
that's midichlorian count.
He's the one who's supposed to restore balance to the Force. They don't mention the offspring is supposed to. I mean, Luke helps to cause that, but it's still Vader's decision to throw the Empire or the Emperor to throw it into the Death Star's reactor. That's what happens. That's who does it. And Megan had talked about this in a previous email too, about that epic, important confrontation. That final scene in Return of the Jedi, that's hard to beat. And probably, I think, stronger after watching Episode 3.
I agree. I think that she brings us some great points here. I don't know if Luke was stronger than Anakin. That's hard to say because, like we talked about, Anakin or Darth Vader is more machine than man. So maybe does his Force count go down or his midichlorian count go down? Does that play into it? Definitely. Something to talk about. Again, I think Luke is a very strong character in Return of Jedi. We talked with Scott Murray about that. What a great conversation. If you haven't checked it out, Dan, I will say it's our top show right now. The numbers are really big on that show. A lot of people like it. A lot of people are mentioning it in their emails. And definitely a lot to talk about still, I guess.
Our last email comes from Jason Duren, and he writes, "Hi, my name is Jason. You can call me at BC Memoirs on Twitter or Bigger's Canyon 80, whatever is best for you. And he wants to weigh in on the pig choke, and he says, this is just my gamer opinion. Jedi Outcast and Jedi Academy were the source of my EU awakening years ago. The skill was always described as force grip in the games, which you could use to pick stuff up and toss things across the room, and even slam an opponent against the walls. Force grip is what you could use to choke someone out too, of course, but just having that ability doesn't mean someone's gone dark. Remember Yoda, the greatest Jedi of all time, jacked those Imperial guards when he was going to take down Palpatine. It looked to me like he totally crushed their spinal columns, severing their spinal cord and running them inert instantaneously. I guess he just wanted to level the playing field. Maybe he cornered Luke on Dagobah and told him just to only choke 2 sentries at a time, and that should be okay for a Jedi." Just kidding. Very cool. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
More force telekinesis, but yeah, that doesn't make it. You know what? I think, Jason, you just solved it for us.
Hmm.
What do you think? That's pretty good, huh?
That's pretty good. He brought that up, and immediately I was like, "Oh yeah, I forgot about that scene when he walks in the little room there, and the guards go down."
Amazing.
Does he force choke them? Or is he slamming against the wall? I mean,
still force.
He's pretty strong in the force himself. So if his force choke is really, you know, that's like a, you know, against the wall, it takes you out, man. And two at a time.
Well, and then he talks about, he points out Luke going from wearing white in New Hope to Great Empire to wearing black in Return of the Jedi, which he talked about before. Totally true, right on, spot on. I think he's got a little bit of the literature background in him, because he talks later about, he has a huge response, as well as Megan did, about our Superman discussion and the religious aspects of it. I do want to throw in something he says about the Ewoks. He says the best part of Star Wars that resonates with him is the idea of the underdogs overcoming. That's what the Ewoks really brought to the table. And they make their crew honorary members of the clan. You get this feeling that, wow, this is all the help that they're going to get. Then there is a challenge of how they're going to complete the mission with just a bunch of teddy bears. You automatically feel like the chips are stacked against them, and they're going to have to rely on something other than firepower to overcome. Bam, the plot becomes interesting.
Ah, so the Ewoks are more of a, you call it a handicap?
And why do you say that?
Well, he gets what he kind of mentions here. He says, wow, this is all the help we're going to get as far as, you know, defeating the reactor, the shield shutdown. Yeah,
that's what you're supposed to think. And then he says, I will admit that the turning point in the Battle of Endor was when Chewie and a couple of Ewoks stole that AT-ST, a piece of superior firepower. But they did it with a Tarzan vine and ingenuity. So maybe Crystal Skull is an homage to the Ewoks as well as it is Tarzan and the monkeys. What do you think about that, Ed?
Oh, I would love to hear Ed's thoughts on that. Let's.
No, I think, like you said, I know you're just stirring the pot a little bit, but the Ewoks are supposed to disarm you with their charm and their cutes and the fact that they're not particularly high in stature. But it turns out, of course, that they are one of the key factors in helping to overturn the mighty empire. I do want to add, at the end he writes, just a side note, baptism is a common imagery in a lot of movies. Anytime you see a character get totally submerged in water, they always come out of that water to totally different circumstances. Their whole world now changed. Like Obi-Wan getting shot off his dragon in Episode 3. When he comes up out of the water, everything has changed. He's now a fugitive and no longer a hero. Baptism is one of the most common events that moves a plot along. Think Predator at the waterfall. The Planet of the Apes with the egg pod landing into the water. Heck, Ratatouille and Remy goes down the sewer. Well, that was a wild tangent. Thanks for reading. I listened to your podcast last week and liked the discussions. Keep up the good work, folks. Well, thanks again, Jason. Clearly going to be one of our more insightful listeners and emailers, although it seems like everyone who writes into our show certainly has a lot to provide and offer. And, of course, baptism, very common imagery, not only in movies, but in literature. It's a very positive meaning. We're going all the way back, of course, to the New Testament and beyond. It's biblical. It's great stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of different imageries and comparisons, because I think that just works in, as far as storytelling goes. A lot of people cling on to that kind of stuff as far as, like, he mentioned a lot of comic books here, Silver Surfer, things like that, The Matrix. It's the renewal of hope, I think. I don't think it's necessarily a person. In these stories, and the renewal hope of the, you know, turning of the tide of a war or of a battle, right, or something like that. I think,
and it's
that's
not always a good thing. I mean, typically, right, the baptism injury is supposed to be a good thing. It does indicate change and rebirth.
Yes,
I guess if you could say it's like Anakin's submersion into lava, his immolation.
Of course,
that's a rebirth too. But it's of course the opposite, and great literature will take what is a common theme or an element and flip it and twist it to be shocking, to rock the normal slide of the culture into a different dynamic.
Very good.
It's pretty cool. If you'd like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com. or Corey C@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section, or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review on iTunes, or listen to us on the Zune Windows Media Marketplace. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torak on iTunes.
Give the evacuation code signal.
That's it for show number 9 of Coffee with Kenobi. A big thank you to Craig Dickinson for having a cup of coffee with us and discussing the proper order of the Star Wars films. Be sure to check out Craig on Twitter at InfluxMan and share your thoughts with him.
Thanks to Rob the Bearded Trio for sending us his latest espresso shot, and to Ed Dalsta of the IndieCast for sending his thoughts on the purchase of Indiana Jones for the Disney Corporation. Thanks also to everyone who contributed to the show, and to all of you out there who listened to and emailed Coffee with Kenobi. Don't forget us to send us your comments and opinions on the topic for show number 10, Anakin Skywalker. This is the podcast you're looking for. This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi, unless otherwise indicated.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.